Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the second of the 2017 Richard Herring Edinburgh Fringe podcast. This week's guest is James Acaster. How exciting! His new book is amazing, by the way, and you must buy it. Go to Amazon and you can get it. There's my daughter shouting out, trying to get on the podcast. I'm doing at least one more Edinburgh Fringe podcast next week on the 18th of August at 1:50 p.m. And one of my guests will be Ian Sterling from the Love Island commentary. He's a very popular man. He's sold out all of his shows and is a very nice man as well. And I might have another guest as well. And I'm looking into maybe doing one more podcast at the final week because I'm not exhausted enough already. If you like these podcasts, why not go to gofasterstripe.com? You can buy DVDs and books. You can buy the emergency question book at gofasterstripe.com/EQ if people are having lots of fun with those. And you can come and see my shows. Go to richherring.com/gigs and you can see details for both Rich Herring's Edinburgh Fringe podcast, one remaining show, maybe two, and also for Ofrig and 50, which is at the Pleasance one at 7:30 p.m. every night. There are still tickets for every performance, but if you're coming at the weekends, I would advise you to book ahead. It's getting quite good reviews and people seem to like it. And as I discuss in this podcast, I screwed it up last night, but not that anyone would really notice apart from me. Anyway, sit back and enjoy this very enjoyable podcast with the very, very funny James Acaster, who has got some extra shows on if you're around in Edinburgh on the 11th, 12th and 13th of August. Check him out. Check out his book. Honestly, you will not regret it. It is the funniest thing I've ever read.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Newtown Theatre Grand Hall. Please ensure all mobile devices are switched off and note that no photography, filming or recording of any kind is permitted. In the unlikely event of a fire, please make your way calmly to the fire exits, which are clearly marked at either side of the auditorium, following the instructions of the Newtown Theatre staff. Thank you for listening. Please enjoy the show.
Worst warm-up man ever. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Newtown Theatre. Please welcome the Radio Times comedy champion in waiting. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, hello, hello. How are you doing?
Thank you for coming. It's lovely to see it. It's all full. It's very exciting here in this Masonic Hall. Welcome to Richard Herring's Edinburgh Fringe podcast. I was hanging out at the Big Jam Sandwich show the other day, and a lot of cool kids hang out down there. They call it Rehef, so I don't know if that's... People nudging each other ready. Were you getting ready to shout? Get ready. That's who's going, get ready, it's coming up. Just in case you're not familiar with... Well, yeah, it's been quite an exciting week. The Fringe is well underway. It's been going okay for me, which is all I care about. And I will talk a little bit about that later. But yeah, I've been involved in that, like some... I mean, it's basically just a clickbait thing that the Radio Times website runs where they're trying to find the comedy champion of the United Kingdom. I don't even know how my name was in there in the first place. But what the Radio Times didn't realise is how obsessive the four people who like me are. And how good they are at setting up computers that can vote several times. And so I've managed to get to the final, which I don't... the semi-final was me versus Ricky Gervais. There's some, you know, there's some history there. Certainly between me and Ricky Gervais's fans. And he was kind of tweeting about it quite a lot, but then I got to about 85-15 ahead and he stopped tweeting about it. At least Jason Manford is putting up a fight. So we'll see how that goes. Do go and visit the website if you are here today. And it closes at 10 o'clock tonight. We'll find out. And, you know, it will be just, I think the people who like me will probably try to vote against me at the last minute because they know how fun it will be if I just am the runner-up again. It's just, if I beat Ricky Gervais and miss out at the last minute. But Jason Manford is a lovely, lovely man, despite the things you may have heard about him. So he just got caught. That's the only difference. Just be more careful. That's what I'm saying. I had a bit of a scare at the weekend. I took my daughter out. I'm here with my family, which makes the Fringe a lot more fun, which is why I saw a show about a Big Jam Sandwich. Bit childish for my liking, I have to say. It was just not realistic at all. We went to the playground near our house, and she went around on this little roundabout, which I later went on with her, which was like it's like a quite clever one. It's like a little bicycle, and you do it, and then it goes round if you do it with a couple of kids. But I went on it because I'm quite small; I could get on it. And that's the advantage of having a short dad. I found it absolutely terrifying, I have to say. So, but then she got off that and she ran to another the climbing frame, and as she was running at full pelt, tripped over and smashed her head into like a little steering wheel hanging off the, which was very terrifying. So we've been to the excellent Edinburgh Sick Children's Hospital. You know, I mean, do they need to put sick in there, really? It's a good job I didn't take her to the Edinburgh Well Children's Hospital, didn't it? They go, oh, sorry, mate, we don't know what we only deal with children who are okay here. That's our expertise. Luckily, she's fine. I got a nice bruise on her head, but it's a terrifying thing being a parent. But that's been my main thing of this week. And last night I did my show. I've been doing my show. I've done it 9 times now. It's going pretty well. And please come along. It's called Oh Frig, I'm 50. The people here have got a program for it. So it's at 7:30 at the Pleasance One. There are still some tickets available. But last night I was quite tired, but I kind of forgot about 4 big chunks of the show. And only realised when I got towards the end and realised, oh, there's a massive callback at the last line of the show to something that I haven't said. So I don't know if that's just because I'm tired or just because I've got a bit complacent because it's show 9 or just because I'm 50 and my brain... And that could be it now. Just, you know... I just shut down. And the good shows I've seen, the Big Jam Sandwich is all right. Monsky Mouse. If you've got kids, take them to Monsky Mouse Disco. That's a lot of fun. I saw Ahir Shah yesterday, who I would have on this podcast, but he's on at the same time as this podcast. A great comic doing stuff about Brexit and being an Indian origin person in the UK at the moment, which not great, apparently. So, look, we're going to crack straight on. We've got an amazing guest for this week's show. Do come again. Next week, we've got Ian Sterling, who is the voice of Love Island, a show I haven't watched, but I understand is some kind of pornography that he then talks over. So that sounds good. Sort of ruining the pornography. He should go on pornhub.com and start doing that as well. Just doing sarcastic comments. We'll talk to him about that next week. And there may be another guest next week. And I'm maybe, because it's been going pretty well, I might try and see if we can do one in the final week as well. Because, you know, I'm not tired enough as it is. So my guest this week is probably best known for his appearance on the 50 Funniest Moments of 2014. And that's all we're going to be talking about, those 50 moments. It's James Acaster, ladies and gentlemen. Here he comes. Welcome, sir. Thank you very much. Sit down. There's some water. You might want to take your mic off the stand. It's up to you. It's all your choice.
Thank you.
You can leave it there if you want and just have it hovering in front of your
take
face.
Take it off.
Yeah, I think that's the best. Then you've got to unwrap it a bit. That's why.
They've really gone to town.
They have really gone to town. I forgot to check it this week. But what were the 50 funniest moments of 2014?
So many. I can't even remember now. I can't remember what happened in 2014.
One thing.
I think that they were showing it. But it was all stuff that was already funny on TV and YouTube clips and stuff.
Right.
So it's a kind of thing where you get brought in as a comic to be funny about something that is already funny.
Yeah.
Which is pointless.
Yeah.
May as well just show the clips and everyone can go, yeah, they're really funny. But instead it's interrupted by people like me going, here's why it's funny, by the way.
As a comedy. Yeah. Still 250 quid, I bet.
Yeah, sweet spondulix. I'm not spitting in the face of it.
I bet it must have got harder to do those as the years passed, like the funniest moments of 2016. There probably aren't 50 funny moments.
Well, but that's where the actual skills as a comic comes in. That's when they should get us in, is 50 funniest moments of 2016. And then we'll really.
And 2017, I mean, the second half of the year is just going to be a nuclear apocalypse, Holocaust.
Yeah.
Wasteland. So
that show, actually, the funniest moments of 2017 will be the only thing you can watch on TV. You'll just be that on every channel on a loop.
Well, you're up in Edinburgh. You're on. I'm not saying my booking policy is lax, but you are in the theatre after my show.
Yeah.
The Pleasance. And thus the only comedian I've met during this fringe, because I have a daughter up here.
Yeah.
So it was quite an easy booking to make. You're doing three shows, though. Are you insane? You're doing your whole trilogy of stand-up shows.
Yeah, I'm doing three different shows. And actually, I'm doing some extra shows, which are a fourth show as well. So, yeah, I'm doing four shows at the festival.
Yeah, how are you finding that? Is that because I found it difficult remembering my own show, show this year.
I've been touring it since January, so people always ask you at the start, like, how do you remember them all? And you remember it by touring it and getting it wrong repeatedly, but then that's what cements it in your head eventually. Yeah. And eventually it becomes one kind of thing.
Yeah, do you find... Well, I sort of find that it doesn't usually happen this early. If I'm on tour for a long time, I'll get so familiar with the show, even if I'm messing around and changing it, there'll just come a day 40 or 50 days in where my mind goes blank and you can't even remember what comes next or what comes after next, and you just...
I kind of have a day when I don't bother, so that's bad.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you're going around doing the tour and trying everywhere you go, and then you have a day when you're like, oh, unless they're a really great audience, I cannot be fucked. And then you get out there and they're not a great audience, and so you go, do you know what, I'm just going to mess around and talk to them and not do this and miss out chunks of the show deliberately. And I do actually consciously think that, but you're doing it to amuse yourself. And I think in the moment you think, this is how I'm going to be funny tonight. This is their best chance of me being funny, is me messing around. But it means they don't get the show,
right.
Which, you know, if they speak to anyone else who's been at any other shows, they might get a bit pissed off how much I missed out.
And do you do all three shows at every town you go to?
Yeah, so I do three nights in every town.
Wow.
And do one, two, three. And on the last night, we do the extra one as well. So,
four.
Yeah, that came in during the tour. Yeah. So it was like, it wasn't originally the plan to do four. But I stupidly booked myself, just doing two halves everywhere. Every night.
Yeah.
So it meant the first half I didn't know what to do because I was already doing the show in the second half. So I'd do even older material.
Right.
And I enjoyed relearning all that. And then I figured out that actually I could make the three shows I was touring one story. And I figured out how to make the one story, but there was a gap in the narrative. So I took the other old material, made that plug the gap, and now it's one story and I've ruined my life.
Do the same people come to all of the shows, though? It's quite a good way.
A quarter of them.
Yeah.
A quarter of them come to all the shows.
Yeah,
and
it's a good way of selling a lot of tickets, isn't it? It's
a good way of tricking. But also, you'd think that the people who come to every show are the really nice fans and respectful, and they're not. They're the ones who really like to heckle and ruin it and make themselves like a part of it. So, yeah, they get really smashed on the first night, and they heckle and go, oh, I hope they don't come again. And then you go out the second night, and they're sitting on the front line, looking at you like, I'm going to do it again.
Well, I'm not impressed, mate. I did 12 shows in 6 weeks, so screw you, I'm the best. Actually, when I met you at the Wells Comedy Festival backstage, you told a very funny story about going to Peterborough. Do you you remember that story that the audience in, there was an audience in
Peterborough? Oh yeah, I mean Peterborough was if it was a, Peterborough was the worst one of the tour by a country mile, I'd say. And they didn't like it. They didn't like any of them, any of the shows I bought them. And it was also a third full every night, which is right. Very annoying when you're there for three nights and you figure out you could have sold it out for one night. And it would have been great. But there's a bit in one of my shows where I tell a fable, which is made up, which is about the goose and the sloth. And I always lead into it by saying about someone who's so judgmental, it's like he's never heard the fable of the goose and the sloth. And then I'll always leave a pause, and the audience kind of like, I'm confused, that's the point. And then I'll go into the bit, I either go into the bit cold, or someone, one in five times, someone will shout out, well, what's that? I don't know what that is. And that's quite a good way in, because when they go, I don't know what it is, you kind of go, I can't believe you don't know what it is. Are you kidding me, mate? Everyone in this room knows the goose and the sloth and you don't know it. Well, I'll tell it just for you then. And then you do the whole thing. But in Peterborough, I got to that bit and the guy shouted out, so I goes, it's like a fable of the goose and the sloth. And there's a pause and he went, what the fuck are you on about? And I was like, oh, good, I get to do that bit. So, like, I went, what, so you don't know the fable of the goose and the sloth? And he went, look, mate, you're talking about these things like we're meant to know what you're talking about, but none of us know what you're talking about. I've never heard that fable. I said, everyone's heard that fable, sir. How arrogant to shout out in a room full of people who have all heard it. Just because you haven't heard it doesn't mean you have to stop the show for everyone else. And then a lady in front of him turned around and went, love, I haven't heard of it either. And I was like, you haven't heard of it either? What are they teaching, Peterborough? This is ridiculous and no one's heard of this fable. Yeah, and then the lady at the front went, right, who ain't heard of it? And about 20 of them put their hands up, looking at me like, we haven't heard of it. And then I told the fable, which deliberately doesn't make sense as well. The whole thing doesn't make sense. It's about goose galloping around on all fours and stuff. And this lady in the front kept turning to her mates going, have you heard of this? I've never heard this fable before.
The good thing about touring usually is you go to a place like Peterborough, you arrive at 5 o'clock and you leave at 10 o'clock. You don't have to spend any time in Peterborough. You have to spend 3 days in every town.
I have to be there for 3 days and I don't dare leave my hotel room because they might be out there. So, yeah.
Have you seen any nice places that you didn't know much about when you've been on tour and have looked around?
This is where my mum would be very disappointed with me because she always says, are you going out? Are you seeing stuff? Yeah. And like, I think if I go abroad, I do.
Yeah.
Like I really, I had one gig in Paris this year and I spent the whole day having a brilliant day and just going out and proper, doing Paris. And then in the evening, died on my ass and went home. And like, that's good. But like, yeah, when I'm around England, I don't do it as much. I think maybe like places like Newcastle I've never been to on tour for some reason.
Right, okay.
And so, it's like when you tweet your tour dates and there's always like one place where you're not going and that's the only thing you hear about on Twitter is everyone going, oh, got something against Newcastle, have you? Oh, someone hates Newcastle, fuck you, mate. And then you go to Newcastle and no one tweets, thank you for coming to Newcastle. You just get a load of other people going, oh, what's wrong with Birmingham? And you're like, oh, it's been Birmingham last year and you didn't say anything. So I went to Newcastle for the first time on tour and that is a place where I think seven snobs like me really underestimate it. Then you go there and go, oh, it's amazing.
It's really amazing.
Good.
I love coming through Newcastle. I always do a gig in Newcastle on the way up to Edinburgh, but I love driving past the Angel of the North. That's always part of my thing, and it's beautiful. I really love the Angel of the North and all that quayside, the Baltic Arts Gallery.
Yeah.
And I took my daughter there this year and we just went up and down in the lifts. It was great. Yeah. I didn't really like the art, but I've never enjoyed being in an art gallery more. She just wanted to go up to the top. She would come out and she'd have a look around, then she'd go, let's go down. We would go down.
I wish you were like that again. It would be great. Like that kind of that world as a kid. If only I could reclaim that and enjoy it.
That's what we're trying to do.
Do the lifts, the escalators.
Yeah. Skipping, I think, is quite, that's what she's skipping as she moves around now.
Yeah.
I really miss skipping. I think it's just a great way to move around.
Yeah. Michael McIntyre will tell you that.
Yeah, he does it. He's managed to do it.
He knows. He's got the right idea.
So I've been sent a copy of your book that's coming out very soon, yes. Which is called James Acaster's Classic Scrapes.
Yes, please.
And it is, I think it's in the top two funniest books I've ever read.
Thank you so much.
The other one in the top two is Emergency Questions by Richard Herring. So, you know, we possibly have the authors of the two funniest books in the world here. I mean, this probably, you know, once that's been established down the line, people will listen to this going, I can't believe the two most witty authors of comedy.
So if you don't find anything we say funny, imagine it written down. It'd be really great.
This is, genuinely, I don't think I've ever laughed at a book on purpose more than that's meant to be funny.
I've just,
like, within about the first 20 pages, I'd cried laughing twice.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm reading, when I was just reading it in Pret a Manger, and there was loads of people around, and just, it was just really, it's that embarrassing thing where you're just sitting on your eating a sandwich, going, I was in Brooks Bar, which is a performer's bar, and it was in the middle of the day, and I was reading, waiting to be interviewed by someone, and three quite earnest drama students were being interviewed by someone for some little paper, and they were just talking, and I was going, and I just felt sure they were thinking, oh, why is he laughing at everything I was putting off? So I had to move because I felt I was. It's very good. You claim it's all true.
It is all
and
true.
And I do believe it's all true. Yeah. But you've got into, in your life, it's a very good way of doing an autobiography, especially if you are a bumbling buffoon.
Yeah, it was an accidental autobiography. Yeah. It was meant to be just this, because I did, where it comes from is I did stories on Josh Widdicombe's radio show. He had a radio show a few years ago. He doesn't anymore. It's not that in demand. But like, and I just do a segment every week where I do a true story. And it was just, it was the publisher's idea to put them in a book. And you just put them in chronological order. You realise you've done so many that it's an autobiography without, you didn't mean to.
Well, it's very nice the way they sort of back refer to each other and all that. So it's often, I think, like a comedian will put together like just a book that's some funny articles they've written.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. And there's no connection to it, but this like it works as a proper book on its own. There's lots of things that I would like to talk to you more about from the book.
Yep.
I liked the first thing that really made me laugh was your anger at the names of the Cubs and the Scouts and the Beavers.
Yeah, well, I don't know if anyone's been in the Scouts, but it's Beavers, Cubs and Scouts. And I think the main thing I get angry about in that is that I don't really know, there's no theme whatsoever. They don't, in the wild, a beaver does not become a cub. A cub, they're all different species. And I think I make the argument there that beavers, so cubs are younger than beavers, essentially, in the wild, because they're little babies.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Unless they're baby beavers, but then they should be called kittens.
That's right.
But then everyone would think about cat babies. So I think I proposed calling them beaver kittens, which I thought was more disturbing.
Yeah, beaver kittens is more disturbing. And then I think you talk about someone calling them cubs, tigers, and bigger tigers. That's the
older tigers.
Older tigers.
Yeah.
it made me laugh. And you, like you, you've also been on a I've been on a skydive, and you've been on a skydive.
Yeah.
Your skydive story's pretty.
It was one of the worst days of my life. I really wanted to do. I was having like a. I'd crashed my car and could have died, and so like got really like, oh, I need to do things in my. I was 18.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, I'm going to be dead one day, and I need to do stuff. And I did a skydive, and the first time I went, it got cancelled because it was too cloudy. Which I still don't understand to this day. But like, it's like too cloudy, we can't skydive. And then it was cancelled again, and then again. And then the fourth time, I just thought, well, it's not going to happen. Like, so I was so relaxed and didn't care. And we went up in the plane like we always do. I was like, not going to happen, it's okay. And then what happened then was that I ended up jumping out of a plane without being prepared mentally, physically, or emotionally to jump out of a plane. Which means it feels like you've literally been pushed out of a plane, like in Mission Impossible or something, like a bad guy. And so the adrenaline really hit. And the free fall bit was great, but the guy who I was attached to, he was really quiet in the plane, but then like it's like he lived for skydiving and he loved it. So as soon as we jumped out, he transformed into this like, it looked like it was a bird. So like, as soon as we got out, he just started going, "Woo!" in my ear. Like I was like, have they attached me to someone else who's doing this for the first time? Because this is... Somewhere else, there's two skydiving instructors attached to each other who are like, this guy's not loving it as much as I thought he would. He's really going nuts. And then he pulled the cord, at which point you kind of go from horizontal to vertical really quickly, and my stomach just went haywire. And he started going, "Check this out, James!" And like he was zigzagging around, and my stomach was like trailing a few feet behind us. And eventually, I had to be, "Oh, sorry, mate. Can you stop doing that? I feel a little bit queasy." And I think queasy is like the word that skydivers hate them. Like they hated. As soon as I said queasy, he was like, and he was there as well. Like his face was there. So I just felt him in my ear going, "Okay." And then he kind of stopped zigging and zagging, and we were still thousands of feet. We were nowhere near the ground, and we're now just really slowly, so slowly, making our way down. But just him in a mood of me and hating me. And me there just like hanging off the front of him like that, just feeling a little bit queasy and a bit upset. And then I realised that, so here's a big tip for you if you're going to do a skydive. This is a really good tip. Don't wear slip-ons. It's very, very handy. So I, at the time, only owned slip-ons, so I didn't even think about what I was doing when I went skydiving. And I realised as we were drifting down, one of my slip-ons had started to slip off, which is the opposite of what I bought it for. And it's like half off my foot. And so I didn't want to mention it to him because I was like, he's already... I don't want to go to him. I'm having some trouble with my slip-ons. And he's just unclipped me and watched me fall to my... well-deserved death. So I hooked my toes, so they were kind of, I hooked my toes towards my shins, so that I was like just hooking my slip-on my foot with one. But it's a lot to focus on when you're like still a long way in the, and also I still wanted to be sick, and I was thinking like, if I'm sick now, like I won't be able to maintain, you know, keeping the slip-on my foot while I'm sick, so it'll all fall out, and then it looked like I eat slip-ons and then complain when it doesn't agree with me when I do a skydive. So I had a lot in my head that I was worrying about. And then I was way too faint. And when we were coming into land, he was like, "Right, listen, James, you're not going to be able to do the landing that we practiced. You're supposed to do a landing where you both pull on these strings together and you both lift your legs up at the same time and you land at the same time. It's like a jump." And he said, "We can't do that because you're too poorly." Which, poorly is such a... You feel like such a child. Say you're ill or you're sick. You're a bit poorly, so we can't do this. And so he said, "So we're going to have to do an emergency landing," which is basically, I don't do anything. So you don't worry about it, we're going to do an emergency. And then he starts shouting down at the people on the floor as we're coming in. He starts shouting, "We got a sleeper! We got a sleeper here, everyone. We got a sleeper." You're going, "Oh, I would have preferred it if that was between us, that I'm a sleeper. Don't want everyone to know I'm a sleeper." But and then we had to skid in. Like, everyone else was doing these landers, looked great. And then the sleeper and his angry friend just came, just skidding in on our butts. Just really, just literally just like that. Like, we're in some kind of Carry-On film. But, like, and then, yeah, it was just, we were lying there. And I was, like, lifeless on top of him. So he couldn't get up for ages because I was just like... So he was underneath, and then someone rushed over and took our photograph, which my mum bought for a fiver. So I still got it in the house, and the photo is so it's me just like this, and he's underneath me looking over at his friends going...
I enjoyed this. I wouldn't want to do it again, but when I did a skydive, I kind of enjoyed it.
I love the free fall bit. Yeah. That was amazing.
I like the stop. I didn't like the free fall bit. I like the stopping bit.
Oh, no.
I like the bit when you're flying, and my guy was quite quiet behind me.
You had a professional guy who was nice and reserved.
It was very peaceful coming down, and then suddenly the ground comes at you very quickly.
Yeah, well, yeah. I didn't see the ground. I had my eyes shut, and I was asleep.
I managed to stay away. We still bumped along, I think. I think they said you had to be under a certain weight to do it, and I lied that I was under that weight. I was a little bit over that weight.
It's just jumping out of a plane. What's the worst that could happen? I would lie about my weight.
We got through it. I did. It couldn't come.
Wasn't the guy who was you were attached to? Wasn't he like, "Hold on a second here"? I'm not sure he's been completely honest. I don't want to know if I want to jump out the plane with him.
I did feel, it made me feel sick as well. I'm glad mine didn't make me go from side to side.
He said, he just told me you probably didn't eat enough breakfast. I was like, well, tell us that in an email or something. You know, say, Make sure you eat loads of breakfast, otherwise this will be an awful experience for you and you won't enjoy a second of it.
But you've been in lots of car crashes. We talked about one the last one we did the Leicester Square Theatre podcast, but I didn't know you'd had two more before that. So you had one when you were 18.
Well, 18, one when I was 22 and one when I was 25, okay. Yeah. And don't drive no more.
Do you not drive?
No, I just, not because I'm scared of it, but just because I think after the third one, I was like, I'd probably best knock this off my head because... I was very lucky because they were all very dramatic, but yeah, no one was hurt in any of them. Yeah. And after the third one, I just thought, it's bad enough, obviously, if you are responsible for anyone getting hurt. But I thought even worse when like you've had these warning shots in the past, chosen to ignore it, and then after a recent one, you go, okay, I probably should have seen that one coming. So yeah, I've just been steered clear of it now.
And how'd you get driven around by someone else?
I've got a tour manager for tours, and then I just get trains everywhere else for other stuff. Yeah, so it's actually more hard when I'm doing if I'm going to visit my family or whatever, then they've got to drive. Yeah, I've got to go to Kevin train station, they've got to come and pick me up in the car and all that, and taxi me around. But
yeah, I don't think I'd get a lift with you.
No.
Your insurance must be quite high as well if you wanted to drive, wasn't it?
I don't know, it might have gone back to normal now, because that's what happened, that's what happened.
They're very forgetful, the insurance.
Well, it kind of just kind of comes back up and goes back to normal, and you kind of go, oh, all right. But, this time it might be quite bad.
The last one was pretty bad.
Last one was pretty bad.
It's pretty exciting.
Really bad.
This is just something I ask everyone, and it might not be a case for you. Have you ever met Brian Blessed?
I saw him do Panto.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I saw him as Captain Hook.
Okay.
With Kirsten O'Brien as Peter Pan.
Okay.
And yeah, it was great. Obviously, you know, I was a kid, so at the time I thought he was amazing. But I reckon as an adult, I might sit there going, "You're making this difficult for all your other." For your co-performers, mate, because whatever they do, he was going on stage when it wasn't his scene and stuff like that, and in the background, and just creeping along the side of the stage like this, and everyone's laughing, and the people who are doing their scene are like, I don't know why anyone's laughing at this, but this is about, you know, clap your hands if you believe in fairies. It's meant to be an emotional, nice bit, and they're really laughing about it, and it's because he's gone past wearing a stupid hat that you found in the props department.
I love him. I love him. Yeah. His daughter's up in a play. The name which has escaped me for a second. It's something about cats. Oh, damn. I'll try and think about it later. It's very good. Go and see it. Look up Rosalind Blessed.
Is it cats?
It's about dogs. It's about dogs. It's about... Oh,
it's about
damn
dogs.
It. I'm really sorry, Rosalind, that I've forgotten the name of... I should be able to get Brian Blessed on the show. I know his daughter. What's going on?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
He'll probably turn up in this one in a minute.
He will.
I can imagine.
And I know it was based on one of your stand-up shows slightly, but I loved your sitcom pilot, that We the Jury.
Oh, thanks, man.
That was really good. And I think all of those ones. I mean, even Goodnight Sweetheart was on that, and I still preferred it. I still preferred it to the reboot of Goodnight Sweetheart.
Yeah, so. That was our main
name. But it didn't get picked up.
Didn't get picked up. Real shame. But such a good experience. And one of those things where, I think there's been maybe some... projects in the past where I haven't put my all into them, and they've either got made or got turned down.
Yeah.
And they get turned down, and you feel really bad that your project got turned down, or it gets made, and you're like, ugh, I'm not, or you're upset that it's not getting a good reception, and people aren't enjoying it. And then, and I kind of did realise after the last one of those that you're not putting as much effort into this as you are your stand-up. You put loads of effort into your stand-up shows, and then you don't care what people say about them because you're proud of them, and you don't give a shit. But, you care about all this stuff because you kind of, a bit of you knows it's not very good. And with that pilot, it was, really fun to just put everything into it and also have a team of people who were all on the same page as me, which is, very rare if you're doing, a project with that many people working on it, to have a director, producers, you know, actors, people at the channel... all on the same page. So I was so delighted with the end product. It's exactly what I wanted it to be.
Sure.
So then when it got turned down, I was surprised at how not upset I was. I thought I was going to be I really wanted to do it. I loved doing the pilot so much that I wanted to do loads more episodes and work with all these people over and over again. But when it got turned down, I was like, I'll stand by it. I didn't feel like I was whatever criticisms they had, they didn't hit me like they normally do, when you go, yeah, that's true, actually, and I could have done a better job there. And then it makes you feel a little bit, yeah, just like you're not very good. But like for this, it was like, oh, that's just a matter of taste. I stand by everything that's in this pilot.
And, yeah. I mean, it's weird because I guess they were doing a lot of things all at the same time. When there was quite, it was a sitcom season.
Yeah.
There was some good. I mean, the Motherland thing was a great one.
Yeah, Motherland was great. Really good.
And I thought the Porridge one was not, out of all the reboot ones, wasn't bad.
Yeah, Porridge was good fun. Well. I had a lady in a, I had a gig in Leeds where there's a lady there who got quite angry early doors. And then she remained angry for the whole show. And then I should have left it and not said anything. But at the end, I kind of like was like, oh, yo, I hope you've all enjoyed it, man. I hope you've, you know, despite early on, I hope you've, she was like, I haven't enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, fair enough. And she was like, it's just that I like clever comedy. I said, oh, fair play. What's your favourite comedy show? And she went, Porridge. And I was like, yes. I mean, I love Porridge, but it's not a thinker, is it? You go away going, what were they trying to say with that episode of Porridge? The subtext is what really keeps me coming back to Porridge.
And did you not, I mean, I know you had a little tiny part in your sitcom, but yeah. The central character seemed to be very much you, and you didn't play him.
Yeah, well, I wanted to play a different part, and also I didn't feel like, I'm not an actor, so like I didn't feel like I could play that lead role, even though it was kind of based on me and one of my shows.
Yeah.
It was, it needed to be more enthusiastic than I am in my stand-up, and I knew I couldn't actually realistically carry off being someone who's really infused and optimistic. So Ed Easton, who's in Gaines Family Gift Shop, who's one of my favourite sketch performers, was my first choice. And like that was another thing as well, is that I got all of my first choice. That cast is exactly who I wanted.
It's a really good
and
cast.
Ed, who hadn't done a sitcom before, I kind of was really from the start being like, oh, this is who I want. And
cool.
Then the production company went for him, the channel went for him, and he did such a great job. But my character was going to become, if it went to series, it was going to be more of a regular character that was in it a lot. It was it's actually a character from one of my other shows, which is all about me being an undercover cop.
Oh, yes.
And it was going to be that character for the whole thing of me being Pat Springleaf.
Oh, maybe they'll do it again.
Later. It all exists up here.
It does.
Got it here.
It is such a shame when there's an alternate. I've got an alternate universe sitcom that might happen, might not happen.
Yeah.
But there's an alternate universe where both of our sitcoms are happening.
Both happening, going head to head, and we hate each other.
It's like you, me, and Manford all over again. and you're on Conan. What was it like? You're on Conan O'Brien's show. Were you doing like just the stand-up slot, or were you interviewed on that?
I did the stand-up slot. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, I did the stand-up slot.
How was it?
If this was anyone else interviewing me, Richard, I would just say it's very good. It was great because it's you, and I know what kind of stuff you like. I'll tell you the truth. first of all, may I say that the people who make the Conan O'Brien show are some of the nicest people I've ever met in TV. Yeah. They run an extremely well-oiled machine, very tight ship, very welcoming. Everyone made me feel great. And also, I was very happy with the end result that went out on television. I got to LA the day before and done a gig that I'd enjoyed very much. And maybe too. So I really enjoyed this gig the night before and kind of celebrated then when I had Conan the next day, which films in the afternoon. So I drank a lot of whiskey and then I went to a Mexican food truck and got a quesadilla, a chicken quesadilla. Went home, went to sleep, then woke up 2 hours later and just filled my toilet with shit. Really shitting everywhere and didn't get back to sleep again. And then I had to go and do Conan. And I went there and, like, I wasn't feeling well, but, like, I covered it up. And then I was standing. Also, everyone had told me the Conan audience are the nicest audience in the world. They're so up for it. It's so easy. But, you know, we know as comics that when you get told that, you're probably going to be there on the one night where they're not easy. So, like, I was thinking, oh, too many people have said this is a really easy gig, and I kind of worried that it won't be. And then I was watching from the side, and they weren't giving the warm-up man much, which was weird, because he's, like, he was doing such an amazing job. Everyone said he's the best warm-up in the business, and they're not giving him much. I was like, well, that's weird. But then the producer said, don't worry, Conan's going to come on and do his monologue. They'll go for that. They'll love that. Conan went on doing his monologue, and they weren't giving him much. And then the producer turned to me and went... I was a bit like, what are you doing? You work here every day. You're doing that, this is bad. So I watched the whole thing, and they're not really giving anyone much for jokes that were funny, really funny jokes that were like, why are they not laughing at this? At some point, it was me laughing on my own in the wings. So I'd already kind of accepted my fate before I went on, and I went on, and they were really tough. If you go and watch the clip on YouTube, it is, you know, if you want to see a man sticking to his guns for 5 minutes, then watch that. I am absolutely not blinking for a second and sticking to the plan, but only because I knew what I was walking into. So it was really hard, and I don't know if you find this, but in the moment, for gigs like that you've built up in your mind and you're excited about, even when they're going badly at the time, you're still not upset on stage, you're just doing it. But then as soon as I come off stage, I was like, oh, my God, like that's the most amount of people who've ever seen me on TV are going to see that, and that was me getting hardly anything and looking like an idiot on American television. Now everyone's going to see that and I look like a twat. And then my agent was like, just going to a steak restaurant and celebrate. I was like, why? Have you managed to talk them out of not airing that episode? Because I don't want to celebrate anything. And then we went to the steak restaurant and I shit myself. Like, literally, immediately shat my pants in a steakhouse. So, it was half an hour after I'd literally walked off stage, went in an Uber to a steak restaurant, I went to the toilet and just shat my pants. But I've been on a TV thing, I had a full change of clothes in my bag. So I went in this cubicle, sorted myself out, came out wearing a completely different outfit. I went over to my agent and said, we've got to go. I'll shat myself. And he was like, this is one of the best steakhouses in LA. I was like, fine. Because he was leaving the next... I was there for 2 weeks, but he was going to leave the next day. And I knew he was really excited to be at the steakhouse, and he's a good guy. So I was like, okay, man. But I ordered a steak... Just to be polite, and then as soon as it comes, I'm not eating that. I'm going to shit myself again. So I kind of sat there, and I was really depressed, and I was saying to him, I just don't think this job makes me happy a lot of the time, and like, I'm not sure if this is a great... And he was there eating a steak going, man, it's fine. You're a great... Five sides. You're a great comic. And I was like, dude, I just want to go home. And so then, like, the next morning, I woke up, and I still had food poisoning. So I've been up all night, still just like going to and from the toilet. Still felt ill, but also I had the additional thing of now I couldn't hear out of one ear. Like, then my hearing had gone and it really, really hurt as well. It was like in agony. So I phoned my American agent up because Chris had gone home and I was like, I had to hold the phone there. I was like, I can't hear out of this ear and it really hurts. And they were like, right, we'll cancel your meetings today and just go to ER. And I went to ER and I wasn't prepared that everyone in ER who works there looks like the people on the TV show ER. They're beautiful. They're so attractive. And I was going in like, you know, I've had food poisoning for 2 days and I can't hear anyone. And this lady took me into, and she looked at my ears and, like, in England, like, the doctors are rude, I find a lot of the time, and not very welcoming. They kind of, when you walk in, they kind of go, you haven't got anything, have you? And you're like, yeah, cool. I absolutely have, that's why I'm here. But, like, there, they're like, hey, how's it going? They're really friendly. But also, they don't speak as professionally as the doctors. Just over here, they would give you a diagnosis as a proper, that's what you're meant to say. In LA, she looked at my ears and went, whew, your ears are hella waxy. That's not great. No, I've got really waxy ears on top of all this. She went, we're going to have to flush them out. So she gave me a robe, but she needed to put that robe on. I was like, my ears are in my face. I don't think I need a robe. She was like, just at least take your shirt off. So I did, I put the robe on, and I had to lay on my side in the fetal position, which obviously when you've got food poisoning, you don't want to be laying on your side, like squashing all this together. Just going on, all the nurses. Also, the curtain was open, and all the really attractive people were walking by. So she was like, just so much water in my ears, salt water, and it was like pouring over my face and down my... I was just being waterboarded for the whole thing. And then at the end, she starts laughing. really, really finding something funny. And she was like, your butt. Your butt is covered in water. And I looked, and it was just my ass, which was completely drenched. And so I was walking out with like a clean shirt on, and everything was like, but there's this wet butt. And because, so I looked like I'd shat myself again, but because within a 24-hour window I had shat myself, I don't know if you've ever shat yourself, but the shame doesn't leave your eyes for a while. So I still looked in my face like a man who just shat himself while physically looking like it as well. So, like... And then I think I spent another 2 days in bed, and then I went out for the first time in 2 days, and I was like, you just got to be out the flat. And I opened the door, and I took one step out into the street, and four people walked past and went, hey, Ron Weasley! You can't even come back to that, because when they hear I'm English, they have a field day that I am Ron Weasley. So that was what Conan was like.
Yeah, good. I'm glad I asked. Yeah. I'm pleased I asked. It seems like this sort of thing happens to you quite... I mean, this is just, you know, as a comedian, this is just wonderful, isn't it, that all these things happen to you?
Yeah, at the time, I'm like, this is wonderful.
Yeah. But like, still playing your into books, my hands. I mean, you're, like you say, to err as human, to err enough to fill a book isn't.
Yeah.
You know, like there's to have the A, to have this yeah. many stories and remember them as yeah. well, I think is quite
also,
interesting.
May I congratulate you on reading that correctly? I did Will Gompertz's Radio 5 show the yeah. other day, and Will Gompertz went, we've got your book here, James A. Kester's Classic Scrapes, to err as human, to err enough to fill a book. And I was like, that's not the full thing, Will. Doesn't make sense. It makes me sound like an idiot on radio. But. Yeah, a lot of things. Basically, the reason why... when I started doing stand-up,
yeah.
all I did was tell true stories because I thought, yeah, these are all the stories I'd tell my friends and would be funny.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was like, well, I'm going to do them on... You know, I'm going to do them on, and everything has to be true. And that was a rule when yeah. I started as an open spot. It was like, it's all got to be true. And then no one believes you when you do it as stand-up. You know, because now, I think, you know, you're all like, it would be weird if he was lying in an interview... in this kind of relaxed, informal, you know, so you all believe me because, you know, it's why would I lie? I mean, weird. But like, and when you're telling your friends, when you're on Josh's radio show, it's weird to lie, and when it's in a book. But like, doing stand-up, they instantly think like, oh, he's going to embellish some stuff.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so all the bits that were like the funny bits, they would be like, nah, you didn't do that. And so it would always die and never work. And it yeah. was like, but Josh, who was open spot with me, liked those stories. And
yeah.
so when he got the radio show, it was like, just, you can put them all on here.
Why do you think so many things, like, because this must happen. This happens to you more than other people. Is it?
Yeah.
I think you're sort of open. You're open to new experiences, certainly in this book. I mean, that's
yeah.
part of it, is you deliberately seeking things out.
Sometimes it's, but yeah, then, it's not deliberately seeking out a bad situation,
no, no.
but it's saying yes to something that sounds like a fascinating or different experience to what most people might. Like when my singing teacher asked me to join a band with her, and the lineup was her on flute, a didgeridoo player, and me on congas. Like, I was like, yeah, of course I'll join that band immediately, because, like, you know, you're in your 50s. I'm in my early 20s. This would be great to be in a band with you playing the flute. And so, but, you know, I didn't think it would go badly.
Yes.
I thought it would be fine. I didn't think the didgeridoo player would be a conspiracy theorist who quit the band during the first practice. Or telling my singing teacher to go fuck herself. So, like, you know, it was... It's that kind of stuff. I was just very open, especially like before. I think, you know, before I found what it was I wanted to do, you know, career-wise or with my life, you know, I was just saying yes to everything and seeing what happened, and you know, everything was an adventure.
Yeah.
And I'm probably a bit more cautious now.
I think it's also probably because the way your brain works. A, you're very observant about things, I think, which makes these stories much better. But also, your pedantry, I think, within. So like. There was the guy who swallowed loads of hot chocolate and said, I was breathing hot chocolate.
Well, no, it was my first day of work at Wicksteed Park, and I was going to be serving food and drinks, and his name was Chet, and he was a really nice man who was giving me a guided tour of the oak tree, which is where we worked. And he said, this is the machine does hot drinks. It's just tea, coffee, hot chocolate. And sometimes you've got to change the bag of hot chocolate in the back. And one time, right, I opened a new bag of hot chocolate and the hot chocolate powder poofed up in my face. And late on that day, I did a sneeze and it tasted like hot chocolate. I was like, I can't work here. So if that's his best anecdote in years of... But it was also the thing that it doesn't taste like hot chocolate.
Yeah.
It tastes like chocolate. It doesn't taste like hot chocolate. Hot chocolate's not a flavour, it's a temperature which a flavour can be served at. Unless he's doing hot sneezes, in which case that should be the story.
But that's, and I love you do, there's a story about you going to a game, a board game night, and then turn out to be doing role play stuff, and you end up playing in a World War One, I think, game, but then you notice that all the soldiers you're fighting against have look like the characters in Dad's Army.
Yeah.
Is that all the
models?
Yeah,
this guy who hated me, by the way. I was paired up with a guy. We were playing a World War One game, and like it was me and my friend turned up. We thought it was going to be... I was trying to do... have a new experience every night of the week. I think again, I was 18. I wanted to do something new every night of the week. I found a Kettering board games club, and I went to it with a board game in my bag, and then discovered it was like, you know, it was Warhammer and Dungeons and Dragons. There wasn't any boards. It was all like, you know, like card games and Magic the Gathering. And so we were put on this this World War game, and I decided to be the Germans, which apparently makes you an actual traitor, and everyone hated me. And this guy that I was on a team with wasn't too impressed. And then, I realised that all the English soldiers we were fighting against were all painted to look like the characters in Dad's Army. And at one point, I had to decide whether to shoot Pike in the face or the chest. And chose the face, obviously. Didn't want him getting up from it, so...
But I think remembering details like that, that's what's... I mean, it's honestly, do buy his book and buy my book as well. And see which is best. I should ask you something. I'll ask you, and this is my new emergency question because this happened to me this week. What is the most benign fairground or playground ride you've ever been on that has scared you? Because I went on a tiny child's roundabout and was terrified I was going to die.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, there was a fair that came to Kettering every year, probably still does, and it had a ghost train on it.
Right.
And the ghost train, for a while, it was just that you got on the train and it was a horseshoe shape and that was it, but a very small one.
Yeah.
And there would just be like little rubber bats hanging from the ceiling. It was nothing, like nothing happened. And because everyone was complaining it was shit, so they got a man in a skeleton outfit to literally, as soon as you went into the tunnel, he would jump out and jump on top of your carriage and just go in your face there. And it was me and my sister, just like this, as like, you know, primary school children. And I, when he did it to my sister, I went, "You leave her alone." And it was like, just carried on going. But then word got out that this man did this. And so fully grown adults were getting on and punching him. Just smack him in the face. And then the third kind of act of this is that he, because he then was anticipating the punches, he was then armed with a metal tray. And when they're trying to punch him, he'd just go, and then, ah! And that was the ride. It was like the punch of skeleton, like, see if you could get a hit. And didn't even quit, just was like, yeah, here's a dinner tray, you can defend yourself. All the people from Corby coming up to kick the shit out of him.
Good. That's a good answer to that question. Here's question 148, if you're playing along at home. Would you rather be immune from ever getting chlamydia or have free Kit Kats for life? You'll get 365 four-finger Kit Kats per year or 366 on leap year, but you would still be able to get chlamydia.
Well, I would rather not get chlamydia for the rest of my life. That would be good. But then that's me. But no, because then you're planning on having a life of shagging around,
aren't
you?
Wear a condom, you won't get chlamydia. You won't get chlamydia.
Yeah, but
you know that's. Free Kit Kats as well. Think of that.
Free Kit Kats forever. That's very nice. But then Kit Kats aren't my favourite chocolate bar. Which is, you've deliberately done that because you know no one's favourite chocolate bar is a Kit Kat. But then, you know, no one's cocky enough to think they're going to just sleep with people forever. So it's very... I give the Kit Kats to my dad, who really loves chocolate and all things sweet. That'd be a nice gesture. But then I'd get nothing out of the whole thing. I'll go for the chlamydia.
Okay.
I won't get chlamydia forever.
Great, good. That's yours.
But then aren't you going to get... You're going to get arrogant about it and just go around going bareback all the time and get something way worse, aren't you? I mean, it's like, oh, well, at least I won't get chlamydia. And then, well, we all know what will happen.
Well, you thought it through, and that was a good, there's a thorough answer. If you had to be in...
Also, throughout that whole thing, yeah. I was trying to think of a joke about fingering with Kit Kat fingers. No, good, and yeah. But I couldn't do it, but no. I want you to know I tried my best.
I can't find it. I'll ask you, what's the strangest thing you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire? This is my favourite question.
So just go rooting around in quite
yeah.
a lot?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I've ever found anything strange in there. I was in the Scouts and Cubs, obviously, which we've already just discussed. And we were doing many campfires in that. I've never been able to root around in a bonfire before.
Sometimes you find things there, you know, burnt, little burnt. I found my first cat in the bonfire. It was burnt.
Was this... You already owned it?
No, it was a stray cat.
And this was the end of the story.
It was a stray cat, and then it got into the bonfire on bonfire night.
Yeah.
And then it got burnt on its sides.
Yeah.
And you know, we stuck by it. We felt
kept
responsible.
It.
We saved the cat.
What's his name?
Oscar.
Oscar, you didn't want to give it a like a name related to
the fire.
The fire.
Berno.
Yeah, Bernie or Guy or just Guy. Just call it Guy.
Bernie. I wish we'd thought of that. That would be good. If you were forced to be in a human centipede with two other people. And you were in the middle, but you could choose who the other two people were going to be.
Oh, great.
Who would you have in front of you and who would you have behind you?
Oh, very nice. in front of me, I would... Oh, who's got a really good diet who I know? Actually, it's like, are we all just getting force-fed the same? I mean, because I assume the first person isn't getting to eat as clean as they always would if, like...
I think they could choose. I think it's quite a benign human centipede maker.
The first person has a menu.
Yeah, yeah. They can just have what they like.
But they can
he's just let you go back into the into your normal life.
Yeah.
He just wanted it. I mean, to ask you who you want at either end is so polite, isn't it? Compared to the real human centipede guy.
Absolutely. Well, I think so. The front probably someone. You know, those people who are like life gurus and stuff, who like every aspect of their life, they're really, meditate, they're very healthy. So someone like, probably Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
Because I think she takes care of herself and she wouldn't, she'd probably never had diarrhea.
You might prefer diarrhea in this situation.
Yeah, actually, you might just want to.
Just slip down nicely,
because otherwise it's like, you got to chew it.
You don't want someone with very hard, solid, big stools.
Not Oprah. Nish Kumar.
Nish Kumar.
Diarrhea every day. And behind me, so many people who I like to shit in their mouths. real tough call. Miss Hearn. Who was my teacher in year 7, who took an instant dislike to me and made my life hell for a year, and is now a head teacher somewhere and has not got a comeuppance in the slightest. Was shit in her mouth forever.
Yeah. Why do you think she didn't like you?
Apparently in her first year of teaching, everyone walked all over her. And so I was there for her second year and she decided she was going to make her mark and put her foot down. But what she did was she chose the one kid in the class who just wouldn't fight back. So the actual, naughty kid, who was called Barry Moore, real name, she let him off the leash to do whatever he wanted. He's swinging on the back of his chair and smacking this metal... He used to smack a metal ruler off the edge of a wooden desk and just be hacking chunks out of it for the lesson, and she wouldn't say anything. And I would literally be sitting like this, and she'd go, James, you're slouching, stand up for the whole lesson. And I'd be standing up for the entire lesson because I was slouching in my seat. And she just really didn't like me. And she gave me detentions all the time. I've been a kid who, until then, had just got an immaculate, clean record. And afterwards as well, never got in trouble again.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know... You know when, like... As an adult, you get angrier about it because you're like, as a kid, when I was 11, I didn't have the emotional maturity to stand up for myself and say to an adult, what are you talking about? I'd just say to her, you're clearly just taking something out on me. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to come to this detention. Because you're a kid, so you just go, I better just be told off all the time. Yeah. And then as an adult, you're like, I want to shit in her mouth.
Do you still have the video of you eating 20 chicken nuggets when you were drunk?
No, I deleted that. I didn't delete it. I lost everything on my phone once. But, at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, Nish Kumar went out and ate 20 chicken nuggets. This is why I'd like him in front of me in a human centipede. He ate 20 chicken nuggets, and everyone made fun of him for ages and called him 20 nugs for ages. And then I got really drunk one night, and I misremembered what had happened to Nish and thought that everyone thought it was cool that Nish had eaten the 20 chicken nuggets. So I went and got the 20 chicken nuggets and I ate them. And then I'd forgotten all about it until I found a video on my phone. It was me and then Ivan Gonzalez from Backs of the Van and John Kearns. And I was filming it and eating all these nuggets, looking at the camera. And in between every one, I'd say something like, "Fuck you, Nish." And eat another one. And then Kearns would like lean forward every now and go, "Fuck you, Nish." And it was like, it was just this kind of like, and then it ended with Ivan really close going, "Hey, Nish, fuck you." And it was like, yeah, that was the whole. And then, yeah, I kind of found it. I think while trying to show off to someone, I think I was like, yeah, if you want to show someone a picture of my nephews and there's right. this video, I was like, "What's that?" And then in front of them was like, "Oh, that's me eating 20 chicken nuggets." Yeah. Cursing Nish.
And all right, so like we've got to go soon, unfortunately. But that's, what does that say there? Money. Oh yeah, no, we won't talk about that. Just can't read my own writing. Have you seen any shows that you would recommend at the Edinburgh Fringe?
Yes, Tom Neenan's show Attenborough is brilliant. If you like Tom Neenan, or if you've seen Tom Neenan, if you haven't, he writes for a lot of radio and TV shows that you probably do like. He is a great joke writer, and also the show is like one story of Richard Attenborough in his early days. It's very silly, very tightly written show. John Kearns was really good. I probably don't need to recommend Kearns to you guys, but if you haven't seen John Kearns, you should go and see him. His show is amazing. And Anne Edmonds, who's an Australian comedian, is doing... she's so funny. I've seen all of her shows, and she's really, really good. And Evelyn Mock is doing her debut hour, and she's one of my favourites.
And are you completely sold out?
I'm doing tonight, tomorrow, and the next day. I'm doing this extra fourth show thing at 11 o'clock at the Queen Dome, and I believe there's still tickets left for that.
Okay, cool. We'll come and see that because it's a big room you're in to have sold out the whole run. Well done on.
Thank you, mate.
Fucking prick. There's still tickets to all my performances if you want to come and see. Oh, frig, no, it's doing okay. I'm more than happy. Well, look, I think we're going to have to end it there, but thank you so much for coming down. I really massively appreciate that. It was brilliant. Good Ladies and gentlemen, it's James Acaster! Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.